Minnesota Dreamer, you're listening to episode 50 and the final episode of the Devoted Dreamers podcast, season 2. I'm your host, Merit Ansa, and each week I have the pleasure of sharing with you the stories of courageous women who are taking steps toward their God-shaped dreams. I believe every woman has a dream, and that God uses the things He puts on our hearts to draw us to Himself. So I created this podcast with the hope that it will cultivate the momentum we all need to find and fuel our calling. Hearing other women talk about what it takes to step forward towards their dream can light a fire under us, and I hope that's what today's episode does for you. So whether you have a dream or no idea of what God may be calling you to, you are welcome here. I love hearing from listeners. Your shout-outs on social media, and especially the reviews you've been leaving lately for me on iTunes, are such an encouragement. And here's one of the latest from Liv Little. She says, "I just wanted you to know how much of a blessing her podcast has been. She covers a wide array of topics and interests, but the main message all comes down to the same thing. God has made you for a purpose. Because that's always a key message, the podcast always holds the right message at the right time. This morning, I was praying for confidence, and the podcast dropped into my phone at a perfect time. It's like God was speaking right to me. Merit, your work is beautiful, and it's definitely making a difference." Okay, Liv Little, I was floored when I saw your words when I just went to look at the podcast reviews. I am so honored, first of all, that you would take the time to write a review, and second, that you would let me know how God is working in your life as a result of the podcast. It is truly my dream that this show and these stories would help other women get unstuck just a little bit faster than it's taken me. Not that I still don't get stuck, but gosh, don't we all need just a little encouragement to keep on going. So I'm blessed to know the podcast has been that for you. Thank you. Your words today are a gift to me. So this week, I'm introducing you to Jenny Allen. I am so excited to share this interview with you. If you don't know Jenny, she is an award-winning and best-selling author of the books Nothing to Prove, Anything, and Restless, as well as the Bible studies Stuck, Chase, Restless, and her most recent, Proven. Jenny is the founder and visionary for the IF Gathering. She is a passionate leader following God's call on her life to catalyze a generation of women to live what they believe. Jenny has a master's in biblical studies from Dallas Theological Seminary, and she lives in Austin, Texas with her husband, Zach, and their 4 children. I can't tell you how much I've been waiting to share this conversation with you, and I'm so glad it actually happened. Jenny has a wealth of wisdom to share with dreamers like us because she's one of us. She has struggled, fought back fear, and has lived to see a dream that's bigger than herself come to fruition. Some of my favorite parts of this conversation are hearing what has given her confidence to keep going when it's difficult, what it takes to move from fear to fun in pursuing her dream, and that her dream is so not about her. And I love, kind of near the end, what she says about the importance of our obedience to the calling on our lives, especially when fear threatens to stand in the way. So brace yourself for that. Whether you're familiar with Jenny and or the IF Gathering, my prayer is that this conversation will impact you as much as it did me. Okay, so here we go. This is Jenny Allen. Hey, Jenny, welcome to the Devoted Dreamers podcast.
Hey, Merit. Good to be here.
I'm so thrilled to have you today. And I'll be honest, I've been waiting on this for a long time.
Oh,
yeah.
I'm so excited. Well, I mean, we've known each other a long time.
Yeah. I mean, we just did the math. What is that, like 13 years?
Yeah. Yes. Crazy.
But in and out, I mean, I probably
know more about you than you know about me, but I've got your special three books here that I've have loved over the years, Restless, Anything, and Just Got Nothing to Prove, but I will be honest, I have not read that yet.
Yeah.
But really excited to have you here and get to share you with the listeners, and I would love for you to just start us off. I'm so curious where you're going to go with this question, but what is your God-shaped dream?
Do you mean currently?
Wherever. I mean, whatever yeah. you want to share.
Well, I mean, the thing that drives everything I do, and I doubt I'll get another one. I think it's a life focus is, and to be fair, it's probably anybody that follows Jesus's life focus is just what he whispered in my soul when I was about to turn 30 years old, which is over 10 years ago now, that to disciple a generation. And that was a crazy calling at the time because I had no platform and no way to do that. But what was cool was I set it aside with zero idea of what he meant by it. And it's pretty cool how far he can take things because without a lot of planning or working on my part in the beginning, it was crazy the doors he opened and how I'm able to certainly at least reach, make a dent in it, right? Like I'm definitely part of a huge body in our generation that's serving it and making disciples. But it's been fun to see that he is faithful and he is able to do crazy, amazing work still today. So it's been fun to watch him.
Well, and I just want to say thank you because, I mean, I know anybody who's like read your books or followed you for a while, like knows that at 30, you didn't like start the very next day figuring out yeah. what that was going to be. But, you know, I know you probably had some choices along the way to say, nope, never mind. I don't want to do this or it's too hard or scary or whatever. But thank you for persisting because I know definitely in the last 5 years, like the things that God has birthed through you have really impacted me personally. And so I'm grateful. So thank you for saying yes.
Well, yeah, I mean, and to comfort everybody out there that has dreams, and I would say I have quit 100 times, maybe more. Mm-hmm. And I have wanted to quit. And it's so cool, like how the Lord perseveres you. I remember talking to a leader I respected one time and said, how have you not quit? And she said, well, I have, but God seems to be the perseverer here. Mm-hmm. And I would say that gave me great confidence that if he wants this work to keep growing, if he wants If Gathering, if he wants my ministry to keep going, that he does seem to keep you going, even when you would prefer to stop. So I appreciate that about him, that that I can be a little bit of a wimp and he's very strong.
Yeah, he is so faithful to just kind of be right there and be like, nope, you're going to do this next.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, okay, so we've had, is it 4 If Gatherings? Getting ready
That's right.
for 5. So where do you feel like your heart is today compared to when that whole thing began?
Well, you know, because we started with just a huge vision. I mean, Disciple a Generation literally was the thing that was behind everything that we were doing. As it went, it took on a life of its own logistically and practically. And as people invested their lives and time in it, it was cool to see everybody, how God brought so many different people around this vision that had different expertise and different ideas of how to serve people and grow it. And so it definitely was beautiful to see the body of Christ working through, you know, many different people with different gifts, from Ann Voskamp to Lindsay Nobles to Jessica Taylor, who was the executive director in the beginning, and Amy Brown, who has worked for it from the beginning as well. You just see all these unique people come together. So you couldn't have imagined like all that God would do. At the same time, the vision's never changed. Disciple Generation is still, I wrote it on a whiteboard yesterday, and to make some decisions about things. We always put that at the top just to be the compass of how we lead and what we've decided to do. And And so I would say what's cool is this last IF gathering that was crystal clear to everybody watching. There was a gathering phase of this that had more to do with come check us out, see what we're part of. Then there was the next few years where people really said, I want to lead and I want to be a part of this and I want to host in my home, in my neighborhood. And so there was a lot more buy-in. And now that we've gathered so many people, there's this real, I think, clarity to where we want to take people. And it really is back to the old ways, which is life on life discipleship. While the internet can be a catalyst for many things and lots of conversation and opinions and certainly even at times personal growth, it has a limit to how much we can grow. And so for me, inspiring and clarifying the mission of discipleship is the call of my life. And so how do I do that? I take the people that God's given me to lead and challenge them to do just that. And so to me, you know, it's building tools to help them do that. It's giving them a vision to do that in their own lives. It's raising the value of it. I think that's another thing that happened at this IF gathering that was really cool was we had, I mean, some of our most quoted people were people that nobody had ever heard of. My daughter's cross country coach came and spoke. I mean, people, her name's Ellen Tucker. We refer to her as Coach Tucker. And the whole internet's like putting up memes with Coach Tucker's quotes on it. And I'm like, this is the win, like to really, truly bring the value and the platform to those that are in the trenches doing the work of day-to-day discipleship that the rest of us are called to serve. Like those of us in professional ministry are called to, you know, it says in I believe it's Ephesians, that we are called, if we're in professional ministry or vocational ministry, that we're called to equip the saints for the work of the kingdom. So I'm called to build tools for people like Coach Tucker. I'm called, you know, when I'm writing a Bible study, when I'm writing a book, when I'm building that, not to build a bigger platform and not to build a bigger ministry. I'm building that to serve the people in the trenches that are making disciples. So what do they need to do that? And I'm hopefully giving them a tool to do that better. That's as book writers, that's in Bible study writers, that's what we feel is we're building tools for people. So I think it's cool that that those people are becoming the heroes and the winners, and it's fun to get to platform them and to really say that this is what Jesus called us to. This is how the gospel has always spread. The internet doesn't change that. Now it certainly can it can distract from that and it can enhance that, but it's still the plan through the local church. Discipleship through the local church is the plan. So we exist to support all that. And I would say it's clearer than ever. It's more fun than ever. It's always been clear to me, but it's now clear to everyone involved because we're at that place where we aren't just gathering. We're able to say, now that you've gathered, now that we're on mission together, here's what we're going to go do.
Yeah. And as you're talking about that, the word that comes to mind for me is ownership. Like, I feel like the aspects of the IF gathering that I've participated in, like, I have some ownership in that. Like, it's not yours or your team's or all the people in Austin. Like, I'm doing what I'm doing here. And so that's a really sweet gift, too, that it's not about all of you, the people that we see on the stage.
Well, so I mean, I'd say it's had very little to do with us. We've actually been shocked at how it's grown, and people, it's so cute. Like, we'll have these organizations reach out and say, oh, we'd love to talk to your marketing team. And I'm like, we don't have a marketing team. Mm-hmm. You know, this is a miracle. Like, the reason this is what it is because all of these women across the world said, I want to lead in my place. Our actual tangible, footprint is very small, but you all's together is very big. And so it's really cool to see so many people take what is just, I mean, even the conference is just a tool, you know? And I always remind our team, I'm like, listen, we've got one job. We're not called to steward, you know, all of this movement of God that I used to feel, you know, I was like, oh gosh, people would say, I just pray for you all the time that you stay pure. And I was like, oh, gosh, I feel so much pressure. You know, how do I stay pure? And I mean, just was spinning out, which was a lot of the process of Nothing to Prove, was just recognizing that, you know, this is God's work and I can't mess it up. I mean, if he wants it to go, it's going to go. And despite me, in spite of me. And so there was a real piece to say, okay, how can I serve him and how can I serve people? It was such a shift to service rather than performance that we can get in accidentally to doing and pressure. And then all of a sudden it became so much fun, because what was a lot of pressure that I had to maintain something or keep it up, even just, you know, motives or anything, it was too much. And so when the game shifted from trying to protect something to trying to serve in my little place, it was so freeing. And that little place is let's effectively build tools for all these amazing people out there that are doing the work with or without us. I mean, they are going to serve God, and they're going to serve and love their people. So how do we help them in that pursuit?
I love that. Well, my next question is usually, what are some of the challenges and roadblocks you faced along the way? I feel like you've talked about some of those.
Yeah.
But are there others that come to mind? Like maybe, you know, speak to that woman who is kind of early in her dreaming. What she might be feeling, the lies, the fear, all of that.
Yeah, certainly early on, the issues were different. The issues in the beginning were fear of man. It was people pleasing. I'd been a pastor's wife, thankfully, for 6 or so years before If Gathering started. So I had learned a lot about that sin and how what mastery it could have in our lives and how it could limit the work of God, because we were serving people and ultimately serving ourselves, because we're trying to be self-protective. We're trying to, you know, make sure that people don't think something poor about us, which is a really futile pursuit. I've learned whether you're trying hard at that or not, you know, people think poorly of you. So it's good just to keep your eyes. I love Hebrews where it says, fix your eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of your faith, because he's saying, you know, you're going to run your race. You're going to throw off the sin that entangled you and the weight that easily sets you back, which I like that there's that differentiator, because sometimes it's not sin. Sometimes that's holding you back. Sometimes it's just circumstance of illness or needs at your home, in your home, or somebody that doesn't support what you're doing. You know, it really may not come down to a sin, but I like that he differentiates it. But he says, throw all that off and run the race that God set before you. And then he says, fixing your eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of your faith. So the fixing your eyes on Jesus part, I really think that verse is meant to be read, that those things are all happening at the same time versus sequential, like you throw off your sin, then you run, then you fix your eyes on Jesus. I really think it's as you're running your race, your sin's coming off. As you fix your eyes on Jesus, your sin's coming off. As you run your race, you see your need for Jesus, you're fixing your eyes, you know? So I think it's kind of all happening at the same time. And I would say with fixing my eyes on Jesus, that part, I've realized that it's so cool to do this imperfectly, because when I see my sin or when I see the weight come on me, which constantly does, then of course I have a choice. Like I can focus on that. I can slow down. I can get off the road, or I can look at Jesus and say, okay, can you help me with this? And typically it's through perspective, like that he gives through his word and with his spirit. And so I appreciate that he calls us always back to himself. And as whether it was people pleasing, or I would say the latest rendition has been, I would say suffering and attack around me specifically, with just family and kids and friends that I love. There's just been so much discouragement and difficulty that sometimes I've just thought, I can't do this anymore. Like I don't know what's attack and what's life, but I don't want to bring extra warfare our way any longer. And I think, you know, early on, I mean, I kind of wish for the days of people pleasing. That actually feels lovely, and wish I could go back to that. It feels like such a luxury to sit around and worry about what people think about me. But I will say it was disabling at the time. It was very effective at the time. So whether it's discouragement or people's opinions or fear, I mean, I was paralyzed with fear. I think it's so cute when people are like, gosh, thank you for being brave or courageous. I'm like, wow, you know, that's really a wrong assumption about me, because I just have been terrified the whole time. But I think what God's asked of me on a daily basis has been reasonable. What he's asked from me on a big scale is ridiculous, but day by day, it hasn't felt overwhelming. There are days it has, but but we do scary things usually one step at a time, and those steps usually prove manageable. And then you see God working beside you in ways that are beyond your comprehension. I mean, I started to just resent fear, because fear to me now is such a sign of my distrust in the Spirit of God and His power and His ability. Because if He's truly as powerful as I've seen Him be, then how do I keep living in this fear as if He's turned His back, or as if I've watched Him motivate and move the actions of people across the world in building stories in each of our lives that somehow meet up together and cause amazing Spirit-filled works to happen. So I can't really doubt Him when it comes to my kid. I'm like, You had the power to bring together through many steps and voices and events the world to pray, to seek You through. How can I doubt You for my kid's, you know, learning disability? Like, do I not think that You're powerful over that and that You have written a plan as well for her? And so I'm learning to rest in His power and provision, but that never is easy, especially the closer home the scary things hit, right? Especially when it starts to hit with my kids.
Yeah. Though I also hear you saying, like, what He's done in you through the If Gathering has strengthened and encouraged you in other areas of your life as well.
Absolutely. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's kind of, I don't know, it's part of the gig, like, go do scary things and I'm going to change you in the process, not just in that thing, but the whole of you.
Well, and I think you said earlier that you'd read anything, and I don't know if you remember the story in the book, but that professor, when I was in seminary, that said, I asked the question in class, how do you grow, or what is spiritual growth? Where does it come from? Because a friend of mine said it only ever comes from Scripture. And I think, looking back, what she meant is what we all believe, which is it has to be within the bounds of Scripture. Because we all know that we grow in multifaceted ways. I mean, in community, in worship, in prayer, in all these things. And he listed all those things. He's like, well, you know, people that have spent their entire life in the Bible that are spiritually dead. You know, you can read the Bible and not grow. And he names all these other things. You can pray and not grow. You can worship and not grow. You can, but he said one thing that it works 100% of the time is obedient risk. Mm-hmm. And I was like, what? But I can say, it's been, you know, a lot of years since I heard him say that, but I can say, you know, over a decade later, that is 100% true. That every time I have stepped out in obedient risk for God, my faith has grown. And so you learn to not resent comfort, because there's seasons of rest. There's seasons of, certainly God gives us comfort through the risking, but it's cool how he does use that, and we can't shy away from it. We have to lean towards it, which means we're going to have to face our fears.
Then let me ask you this. What, how do you do that? How do you face your fear when you're, you know, curled up in a ball and, Lord, I can't do this? What has helped you in that?
You know, my team makes fun of me because I talk about, death a lot. It's kind of creepy. They all laugh at me because I really feel like for whatever reason, God has given me a view of the brevity of this life to the point that I really don't struggle with making an idol out of everything here the way that I would if I didn't think about death almost daily. And I'm not saying I think about dying a lot, although I do sometimes, but I think about heaven a lot. I think about how fast these 40 years for me have gone. And I think how fast the next 40, if God gives me that many, will go. It just feels like a breath to me. I really truly feel just this urgency to spend it so well. And I think that perspective has changed everything about us. It's changed every decision we make. It's changed the risks that God's asked us to take. They're worth taking, because if they're for eternity and He's called us to risk for the good of people and the glory of God, then those risks will prove worthy. And they'll prove the most worthy. They'll prove more worthy than anything we could ever do in the flesh and in the temporary. So I want to make those risks. I want to take them because I really do believe we'll be in heaven so soon. And and I'll I don't want to get there. I always say I want to get there out of breath. I want to get there. Just I'd run my race and I'm like, oh, okay, okay, here we are. Okay, that's over. Which sometimes and some days running that race, I won't be sad. You know, like Paul, I'm like, it's better to be with Christ. I get how a dude writes that. You know, I'm not gonna, you know, I'm not in a desperate dark place, but I get that life gets so hard sometimes and you really believe that Jesus is home and you're headed there. It's better. And I can't wait. But I also want to take every breath he gives me, every opportunity he gives me, and do what he's called for me to do, to my little marked race. And I say little because I feel that. I also feel like, gosh, I'm a part of many generations. I'm a part of a very big generation now that reaches all over the world, that's doing amazing things. I want to play my little part as well as I can and help, God willing, a lot of other people play their part well too.
Going back to you talked about just the day-to-day, how we need to take the each day one day at a time. What have been some of the ways that you've done that? Like, just been able to, like, what do you say to yourself when you wake up in the morning for whatever's on your plate for that day?
Well, one reason that I believe dreaming and living missionally is so important, being in the race is so important, because I actually believe that you stop thinking about yourself so much. You stop thinking about your own comfort. And, you know, at this point, it's a luxury to think about people's opinions because I'm too busy. Like, in the other room is my adopted son that is a result of surrender and obedience and the greatest gift in the world. But he's, you know, he needs things. And I've got three other kids at home that one's going to camp tomorrow. I've got to take care of them. So I've got a real mission there, a missional day ahead, as well as I've got an office full of people that are gifts from God that God's given me and to lead, and they have needs. And I'm going to go through a budget here in a few minutes. And so I think something about obedience in the way that God's called us to it causes us to be able to live in the moment, to do the day, because we have enough in the day that matters, that we really can't get much ahead of ourselves. And I think that's a gift. You know, I think to work hard is actually designed by God. I think about Adam was working to name the animals, to care for the garden before the fall. So we know that work is a gift, and we know that certainly children and doing, you know, any kind of work, really, even a budget that I'm about to look through is it's all a gift. And while there's some curse attached to it, it's also some of the best things that we have here. It gives us focus. It gives us purpose. It gives us vision. And so I would say if you feel like you're having a hard time just doing your day, apart from like circumstantial going through a difficult time, right? Like we all have those. That's a different reason a day is hard. Then really pray and ask God, what am I missing in my life, in the soil of my life that you've given me to serve, to love, to give my life to? Because we have to realize that the little things are the big things. The taking care of kids is making, I mean, my four disciples that matter to God and to us more than any others will make on earth are those four kids. If he hasn't given you children and you are able to invest in other people, well, then that investment, whether that's through a workplace or college campus or through your neighborhood, the apartment complex, whatever, that is the most important work. So I think we've got to shift our idea of what it means to do important things. I've actually noticed as I've done more of what the world thinks is important, I've had to work harder to do the things that I think actually God thinks is important. So I've had to make more space for real life relationships and discipleship and investing in the everyday in my life locally. And so I've really had to deal with, okay, I do believe God's called me to these things, but they're very secondary to my local church. I'm serving in the nursery, not the nursery. I'm actually serving third graders, teaching Sunday school, you know, my children, the girls in my office that I disciple, the friends of my kids that are in our home that I disciple as well. So those are priorities to me. And then out of that, books and other things might come, but that is not the most, I don't think I'm going to get to heaven and God's going to go, wow, thank you for you know, writing that book or having that conference, I think he'll say, thank you for making disciples. And that will mean right in front of me where I was.
Yeah, that's great. Well, I would love to hear what resources or books or podcasts or anything that you would recommend for women kind of at the beginning of their dream journey.
Wow. Okay. I mean, one of the books that I've written is on this very thing, Restless, of just helping find it. Because I think a lot of people they don't know how to find what it is God's called them to. And it's cool because about 50% of the people that read Restless end up saying, oh, I don't have to change. It was right in front of me. I was just missing it. And then 50% of the other people say, oh gosh, I hadn't even realized that that was a unique calling, that I could actually go serve in, you know, a clinic that helps pregnant moms, or I could go serve in a place that, is dealing with, you know, or even just be a teacher or do therapy. I didn't realize that those things could be what God meant when we talk about, you know, mission and calling. So it's cool that, and one reason I wrote that was because I was having a hard time kind of finding that low hanging fruit where it's really easy. It's not this complex, expensive conference you have to go to. It's actually just a small, simple process. And so that is a resource. But when I wrote that resource, I would say I read a lot of books on calling and things. And one of the ones I love is actually called The Calling by Oz Guinness. It's a fantastic book that I think would be helpful to people in it. I know that Donald Miller does a process that I think is so powerful that I learned about afterwards. And I actually had to tell a guy that works with him, like, by the way, I wasn't copying, because some of the principles are really similar to Restless. But it's so cool. It's they basically storyboard your life, and so his conferences on that are really cool. I would say podcasts. I think being around people that inspire you, that ask you good questions, that know you, that know your gifts, is always helpful. And I think trying different things. I always encourage people, even if they finish Restless and they go, I don't know what to do, I'm like, well, do you know one thing that could be it? And they always can say yes. Then I say, well, go try that in any form. Volunteer, show up, be around somebody that does it. Like, just go be around people that do what you do or want to do. And I think that helps inspire. Certainly there's a lot of those people for me that have been cheerleaders along the way, that have been role models, usually from a distance. You know, I haven't been privileged until recently to know all those people. So I would say, you know, just, it's okay if it's from a distance. Just those people oftentimes create podcasts, create resources that help you feel like you feel close to them. And I would suggest that, like, just watch and learn from, and I would say also learn from people that are doing it. If it's ministry related, learn from people that are doing it in a secular space as well, because things similar, because we can learn from people that are not just like us. And I certainly have studied and read a lot of books that I admire the writers, because I want to see how they write. And you know, I read the book by Stephen King. You know, I'm like, well, I, as a Christian writer, you wouldn't think that would be who I'd be learning writing from, but golly, he's an incredible writer. So, you know, certainly Bird by Bird by Anne Lamott, that, where she is more in the faith stream, but yeah, there's a lot of, people that have influenced me, and I think it's important we learn from everybody we can.
And what would you say to the woman who's like, well, there's this thing in my heart, but I feel like that's already been done, or too many people are doing that already, so there's no space for me?
Well, I think that's absolutely the most ridiculous. I don't even have, I have no stomach for it. I'm sitting here going, okay, there are so many people that need resources, that need, they need so many things. I travel and I look into people's eyes and I'm like, golly, like there's 7 billion people on the planet. Let's see. I mean, just try to make that argument. And are you going to really get to heaven and say, God, sorry, it was already being done? You know, I mean, he's going to go, okay, that's right. Cute. You know, I had a plan.
Nice try.
You didn't step into it. Like, you didn't even know what I was going to do on the other side of you stepping into that. So I think we've got to get over. I mean, that's a really, prideful assumption that our gifts are not needed, that our, lives don't count. It is saying that God's a liar, that he made us for no purpose, that there's not need all around us in the world, in every category that I look in. So, I think that's enemy work, you know?
Yeah. Well, and I was leafing through Restless before we got on the call, and just saw this verse in here that you quoted, 1 Timothy 4:14, do not neglect the gift you have. Like, yeah. He calls us to do the thing he's called us to and use the gifts he's given us. So,
and I'll say this too, if that's your argument, then you're spending too much time looking around instead of doing what God's put in you to do. And if we, again, run our race, we are required to fix our eyes on Jesus. Because again, the day contains too much for me to look around and see what everybody else is doing better. Are people doing everything I'm doing better? Heck yes, they are. Are you kidding me? And every category that I touch, people are doing it better. And yet God has still called me to do it, and he's using it. And it's a miracle. But it's God, not me, and I know it. And it's not how awesome my gifts are. It's how awesome my God is, and that I'm walking in faithfulness and obedience to what he's called, not some brilliant plan to be the greatest writer, speaker, conference creator in the world. I'm called to be faithful, and that's a lot less pressure and a lot more fun way to live.
I so love this conversation, and I think we could just wrap up with just, Jenny, what would be your final closing words to the devoted dreamers? This episode is the end of season 2, and would just love to hear your final words that you would leave us with.
I just think of the verse that says, do not grow weary in doing what is good, because in the proper time you will reap a harvest. And I just think there is a weariness to the work of dreaming. Certainly just sitting around and dreaming costs very little, but actually accomplishing those dreams and leaning into the obedience that God calls us to in this life, that's costly. And I would just say there's very few cheerleaders. There's a lot more critics, and do not grow weary. Do not grow discouraged. But keep your eyes on him and remember that there is a harvest, and that harvest is more important and more priceless than we could ever imagine. It's the souls of people. Yeah, and I'm talking to those people that start little businesses on Etsy. I mean, there is no such thing as non-sacred work. Like, work is sacred. And the work we do is meant to lead us to have influence with people that may or may not know Christ or that need to grow in him. So there's not unimportant work. So whatever the dream is, I pray that you would not grow weary in it, that you would be faithful and encouraged that it matters, even on the days that it, maybe especially on the days that it feels like it doesn't.
If you have ever needed to believe your little dream mattered, this was the episode for you. And isn't it so awesome that we could learn this from Jenny, a woman that God has used to launch a ministry to hundreds of thousands of women around the world? I love what she said about just taking it one day at a time, acknowledging that there will be days where it's harder to do that, and days where you just have to dig in and do the work. She encouraged us to fight back against fear and comparison and the lies of the enemy of our souls, who wants us to believe that we don't matter or that our dreams don't matter. Instead, let us remember whose we are and that the God of the universe has given us good gifts that he's called us to use for his glory and our good. I would love to hear your takeaways from this conversation with Jenny. Would you jump on over to the Devoted Dreamers Insiders group on Facebook and let us know what you learned today from this episode? In case you're new to the group, know that you'll get early access to free resources I share on the show, and you'll join a growing network of women who can be on this journey with you. You'll find us by searching for Devoted Dreamers in Facebook groups. And in case you're not on Facebook or you want to chat about this episode elsewhere online, you can use the hashtag DreamerChat50 to share your thoughts on today's show. If you need a question to spark the conversation, I've got one for you. Here it is. How has your faith grown through your obedience? And just so you don't have to stop what you're doing right this minute, I will post the question and the hashtag in the show notes and the show description so you can find them later on. And by the way, The show notes for this episode, as usual, are at meritonsa.com/podcast/50. And that's where you can also find the resources mentioned today, the scripture Jenny talked about, as well as how to connect with her and the If Gathering online. You can also find that link in the show description, so you can just click to it from your podcast app. So this is it, the final episode of season 2. I can't even believe it. I am thrilled to have been here with you for 50 interviews. Maybe you haven't been there for all of them, but I sure have. And before I head out on vacation, I just want to say thank you for spending your time with me and my guests this season. It's an honor to share these conversations with you. And I also would love to know a little bit about you and what you've enjoyed along the way, and maybe even some feedback. So I've created a quick 10-question survey, and over the break, I would love to have you fill it out. It would help me do a better job of serving you through the podcast. And as crazy as it may seem, it's one of the only ways I know of to learn more about you, my listeners, because so far it's just been me guessing what you'd like to hear. So you can find a link to the survey at bit.ly/dreamersurvey. All that is lowercase. So that's it for episode 50. And if I can say it, season 2 is a wrap. I feel a little bit like I'm saying goodbye to an old friend after a sweet visit together. I am excited to take a little break and rest up, so I will be energized for our reunion again in a few weeks. I'll be back with a new season on Wednesday, July 19th. So go get caught up on the episodes you've missed. Go fill out my survey. And yes, one more thing, please take a minute to go review this show on iTunes or Stitcher or whatever app you use, because when you do, you're helping other people who need this show to find it as well. Thank you again so much for joining me. And wherever you are with your God-shaped dreams, I pray you have the courage to take one step toward their realization today. I'll see you in a few weeks. Whoa!